Hello and welcome back to another episode of India on Cricket 8, your weekly dose of Indian cricket discussion, right here by your usual podcasting app, available on the internet via video as well on YouTube. I'm your host, Nikesh Rugani, as always, and I'm delighted to say that this week joining me is my good friend Abhishek Jhunjhunwala, a former IPL player, former India A player, spent many years at Bengal, now lives in London. Abhishek, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Nikesh. Good to be on the show.
And, well, we've got a lot to discuss as well this week. You and I were both, of course, engrossed in that first test match between India and England. And look, ahead of the series, there was a lot of chat, wasn't there, amongst Indian cricket fans, amongst journalists, broadcasters, former players like yourself as well. It was difficult to see England with a chance of winning the series. There was a general consensus that, look, it's not going to be an easy challenge for India, despite it being at home, just because of the way England play. But look, a couple of days on from the test, how shocked are you at not just the way England played and their sort of brand of cricket, but that massive turnaround? I mean, 190-run deficit in the first innings, it just doesn't happen in India.
Yeah, absolutely not. You're absolutely right. I think somewhere down the line, India was a bit complacent. When they batted in the first innings as well, they managed to roll them out for a very small total. The pitch was fine. I didn't see many demons in the pitch. I think where India went wrong was when they got an opportunity to score a massive 550, 600, they just rolled over for 400 plus. And you see majority of the wickets, Nikesh, they were all thrown. Nobody actually got out to a good delivery. Most of them wanted to go for those big shots. A lot of players got out trying to hit the ball for a six and got caught at the boundary. So I think the approach wasn't right. And I just feel that Rohit and the team never expected England to come back. After 190 deficit, they thought we're going to win this game with the innings to spare. And that's where I think they got it all wrong. The field placement again with Rohit captaincy, there was a question mark because it was a bit too attacking at the start and a bit too defensive when they got going, when Ollie Pope started scoring those runs.
Yeah, and look, we've watched a lot of Indian cricket over the years. We spent a lot of time in commentary boxes together. For those of you who don't know, Abhishek and I commentate together quite often on the IPL for BBC Sport for Test Match Special. And Abhishek's going to be involved later on in this series commentating for Talk Sport in the UK as well on the radio. It's a very different sort of side and an attitude, really, it looks like to me anyway, under the captaincy of Rohit Sharma, especially when you consider that Virat Kohli's missing for the first two tests, so he's not even in the side. And I don't want to be one of those Virat Kohli fanboys who says, oh, things are never going to be the same because he's not captain. Things do evolve, things do move on, sides move on. We've seen that with various, you know, teams, you know, great teams across different countries over the last couple of decades. But it's just a complete, almost a U-turn in the styles of captaincy. There's been a lot of criticism that Rohit Sharma let things drift when England were building that second innings total and Ollie Pope was batting and they just kept just churning out the runs. I mean, look, the pitch was still turning. It was still offering assistance to India's best bowlers. But, you know, first and foremost, yes, Ollie Pope played brilliantly, but just to let England's lower order as well support him in the way that they did. Do you agree with those criticisms of Rohit Sharma in that instance and perhaps other instances over the last year or so, certainly in terms of his test captaincy, that he just lets things drift a little bit too much? Because that's how it appeared to me.
I think that's how it feels, if you ask me, because even when they came out to bat in the third day, India allowed them to score 100 runs with the last four wickets, where they should have rolled them over for 30 or 40 runs, and then India wins the test match, because India only lost by 20-odd runs. So you're absolutely right. I think Rohit was a bit too defensive because he allowed the tail-enders to get easy single and bring Ollie Pope on strike, where it should have been the completely opposite, where he should have really attacked and asked them and invited them to go over the top and take a few chances, which they didn't have to. And Tom Hartley, again, as you mentioned, batted brilliantly, bowled brilliantly. And to some extent, the way they went after Tom Hartley in the first innings, especially Yashasvi, they didn't think that he's going to come back the way he did. you've got to give a lot of credit to him. The way he bowled, he slowed his pace down. He bowled brilliant lengths. He always asked those questions where he was trying to miss the outside edge, and also some balls were just going on and hitting the pads where Rohit Sharma got out. It was a brilliant delivery. So you've got to give a lot of credit to him after getting hit for pretty much boundaries all over the park in the first innings to come back so strongly. It just shows that what mental character he's got. But again, going back to Rohit Sharma's captaincy, I think Rohit will have to learn when he's got another team down, he's got to try and finish it, finish the job where he's letting other teams drift too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, sometimes captains can be guilty of that, you know, just when they perhaps in their head have tried everything with different combinations, with different bowlers and different field settings. It just feels like there's that lack of intensity as well. And we're not just talking about somebody like Virat, the captain, but Virat, the player, when he's out there in the field, G-ing the troops up. There's nobody really other than Virat Kohli in that side who tends to do it. Others feed off him when he's out there and he's doing it. There's nobody else with that sort of same fire. Yes, there's lots of world-class players on show, but, you know, a lot more softly spoken and a lot more chilled, I suppose. So, you know, some young players like Jaiswal and Gill in there as well. And, you know, the likes of Rahul, Jadeja, Ashwin, all these other experienced players in there. They've not got that kind of same character as somebody like a Virat Kohli. So, yeah, frustrating to see that lack of intensity. But look, from an England point of view, what a fantastic victory. What an innings from Ollie Pope. What a performance, as you touched on there, by Tom Hartley in that second innings. Tom Hartley, let's focus on Tom Hartley first and foremost. 7 for on debut after being absolutely tonked in the first innings. I mean, he looked as though he didn't belong anywhere near Test cricket, particularly Test cricket in India. That can happen when you're making your debut. You're obviously going to be feeling a lot of nerves. You know, you're on the big stage. You're playing in the toughest place in the world as an overseas player to come and play Test cricket, and that's been proven over a number of years. So to come back in that second innings, how well do you think he bowled? I mean, was it all down to Tom Hartley? Was a little bit down to the way India approached him? Or was it just, you know, you've got to give all the credit to somebody like that who can do that on debut?
No, I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Tom Hartley. Yes, you can always talk about the soft selection. You can talk about the soft selection of Shubman Gill, where he went with hard hands. Again, Rohit Sharma didn't play it particularly well. But you cannot take anything away from Tom Hartley, especially, as you said, after getting tongued all over the park in the first innings. And there must have been so many doubts in his own mind that, do I actually belong in this level? Am I fit enough to play at this level, at the test level, and especially in India? Never easy, but I think it's just not about Tom Hartley. You've got to give a lot of credit to Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum as well, how they have handled him and the conversation they must have had after the first innings with him, that we saw enough in your and the ability you got. You just got to go out there and back yourself. And I think there must have been some chat regarding the speed he was bowling in the first innings. I think he was trying to bowl a bit too quick. And you can't blame them because they play so many white ball cricket, so much T20 cricket. But he realized it quickly that what sort of pace you need to bowl on Indian surface to try and purchase, to get that purchase, to get that spin. The quicker you bowl, the ball doesn't really turn that much. But the moment you go slightly slower in Indian conditions, that's where you can really take full credit of the pitches. And I think that's what he did in the second innings.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And look, he's going to have a massive part to play for the rest of the series. We don't know about the injury situation with Jack Leach. Obviously, you know, England were almost a bowler down, really. I mean, he was bowling a few overs here and there, couldn't bowl particularly long spells, obviously looked in discomfort and in pain throughout both of those innings, particularly the second innings. So for England to come in with three spinners and just one seamer as their specialist bowlers, and then getting some overs from Joe Root, to turned out Joe Root did more bowling than he did batting in this test match, which it could be the case going forward through this series. He's going to have a big role to play, batting at the top of the order, bowling lots of overs of off spin. So, you know, to have somebody like Leach injured, it really gave more responsibility to the likes of Hartley and to Rehan Ahmed, who I thought did a decent enough job, to Joe Root, who looked dangerous every time he bowled. Mark Wood went wicketless through the match, and I think this may be the first time in history that England have taken 20 wickets in a test match and none of them have fallen to a seamer. I mean, it's if Baz Ball was about anything, it's about being able to adapt to things like that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. And it's very rarely you see England going wicketless with their fast bowlers. But that's what the conditions are. You knew that when they were coming, they must have known that the wickets are going to be in that fashion where they're going to turn. And it's, there won't be a lot for the fast bowlers. But again, if Jack Leach doesn't play the next game, there'll be a massive question mark. Who do they bring? And how well, and who's going to bowl the overs? Because there will be a lot of pressure on Tom Hartley to bowl a lot of overs. And as you mentioned, Joe Root as well, because he probably have to do more bowling than batting. Again, I think Joe Root need to go back to his own approach. Yes, we always talk about baseball and being aggressive in the mindset. But I like the old Joe Root, where he would always be the guy who will stick around, who will bat till the end and everyone bats around him. And I think he's got to go back to that particular role.
Yeah, I mean, he no doubt he's going to score some runs at some stage. There's four more test matches to go. He's too good a player not to. I mean, he's the all-time record run scorer in test matches against India. A lot of those runs have come in India as well, even on the last tour when he scored big in Chennai early on in that series. So, look, he will be back. I mean, was it a massive shock then, given the conditions like you just mentioned? Look, fast bowlers are not really going to have a massive role to play unless you've got the skill set of somebody like a Jasprit Bumrah, who can, you know, bowl well on these slow pitches, averages 15 in his test matches that he's played in India. If you've got somebody like a Mark Wood or Jimmy Anderson, were you surprised first and foremost that Jimmy Anderson wasn't the fast bowler that they picked given his previous successes in India? I mean, I get what they were trying to do with Mark Wood, that extra pace, and, you know, it's never comfortable, but despite the pace that the ball was coming out at, he wasn't reaching the batters at the same sort of pace because the pitch was so slow. So that might have been a miscalculation. But were you surprised by the team selection? A, no Anderson, and B, just one seamer in their attack?
I think one seamer was a bit of a shock, if you ask me. And why going for Mark Wood? You answer the question. Because if the ball isn't swinging, Jimmy Anderson isn't going to do a lot on these pitches, because it's going to be a lot easier for the batters to go after him, especially with the new ball, where the ball will come onto the bat. And if without swing, Jimmy Anderson would have struggled. With Mark Wood, you can get that extra bit of bounce. Again, they must have been thinking that when India is 6-7 down, they can go the short ball route and try and get those quick wickets with the tail enders. And we saw that plan against Akshar Patel. Yes, because of the lack of pace on the surface, the ball was not reaching Akshar Patel. That's a different story altogether. But I think that was the mindset. Maybe that will change in the second test. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't, if Mark Wood is given another go before they bring in Jimmy Anderson. Yeah, but it's going to be tough for the fast bowlers. We know that. But Jasprit Bumrah, he knows these conditions better than anybody else. And he's got the skill set. He's got more skill than any fast bowler in world cricket. And I think Mark Wood said it in his interview as well, that don't make us look silly by bowling that well on these surfaces. And that's what Jasprit Bumrah can do. He's so, so special. And he's got so much variety. He uses the slower ball in test cricket, which you don't see other bowlers using that much. So he's a complete package.
Let's talk about that off spinner as well.
Yeah.
He seems to have perfected that. He started doing it quite regularly on the South Africa tour, had a bit of success with it down there. I mean, he absolutely rags it, doesn't he? And in Indian conditions, somebody who's able to bowl a fast off cutter like that, and it's a slower delivery to an extent, but it's not a floaty slower delivery. It's a, you know, a sort of mediumish kind of slower delivery. It's still pretty good pace. It's really difficult for the batters to pick up, just because he's got a slingy wrist anyway when he's bowling his normal deliveries, and the fact that he just got to roll his fingers over the ball at the last moment is such a whippy fast action as well, difficult to pick up for the batters. I mean, that is some delivery, isn't it?
I mean, it's very difficult to describe. And as a batter, as you mentioned, it'll be so difficult to pick it because his arm action doesn't change. He doesn't really slow his arm down. It comes at the same pace. It's just the wrist and the fingers. He rolls the fingers over the ball. So as a batter, it's very difficult, especially in test cricket with the red ball. And if you've got skills like that, you're always going to ask those questions against top quality batters. But again, going back to the batting, England will have to bat much better. Ollie Pope, brilliant innings in the first test, but he got a bit lucky. He kept playing those reverse sweeps and they kept landing in the The ball kept landing in places where there were no fielders. He was dropped by Akshar Patel. You got to give a lot of credit to his approach, but he's got to be a bit cautious in the second test, I think.
Yeah, but certainly a massive confidence boost for somebody like an Ollie Pope. So they're going to have a different bowling attack to contend with in the second test, because we know that Rabindra Jadeja isn't going to play. He's got a hamstring injury, and it's unlikely that he might make it back even for the next couple of tests at least, let alone the rest of the series. We just don't know with him. With KL Rahul, again, you know, from a batting point of view, he's going to miss the next test. He might just be out for the one match. So that's looking a little bit brighter from an Indian point of view, because look, he's been somebody who of late has really been picking up his form across formats, particularly in ODIs and in Test cricket. And, you know, so crucial when you've got somebody like Virat Kohli missing in that top order. So if you look at the entire sort of injury or absentee list from an Indian point of view, it's getting bigger and bigger. They've got a lot of bench strength, which is a massive advantage of Indian cricket at the moment. Who do you bring in? How do you deal with, first and foremost, let's talk about the batting. Rohit Sharma plays, obviously. He's captain. He's going to open the batting. Jaiswal's going to open with him. Then the conundrum. How long a rope does Shubman Gill get? Because, you know, if you look at somebody like a Pujara, did he get as long a rope as somebody like a Gill? Maybe, to an extent, but is it time that we start discussing Shubman Gill's place in the test side, given his form over the last 10, 12 test matches that he's played? You know, it's a decent amount of time. It's in different conditions, and it's just not happening for him at the moment. And his body language would suggest that he's really low on confidence. But who do you bring in? Do you bring in a debutant? Is that too risky? How do you see that top order shaping up?
Yeah, I think it's a very difficult question. And also, given the form of not just Shubman Gill, also Shreyas Iyer. You know, the issue with both these players, which I feel, is that you're never too confident. They're always one shot away from getting out. Yeah, they might look good for the first 10, 15 minutes. You might see some beautiful shots from their bat, but suddenly they play a shot, which is unnecessary, especially in Test cricket. So I think without KL Rahul, without Virat Kohli, England will see it as a massive opportunity to really shake that middle order. Do you bring in Sarfaraz Khan? Do you bring in Dhruv Jarrell? That's the question to be asked. A team management will have to do a lot of thinking. But before that, I think both these players, Shubman Gill and Shreyas Iyer, the team management need to have a proper word with them, and they need to take more responsibility, because you can't carry on batting like this. And just because they are talented, just because there's a lot of chat about them being the next two top players of Indian cricket, you cannot keep giving them opportunity, because there's, as you said, there's a massive bench strength. There's a lot of players who are performing heavily in domestic cricket, and they would be asking questions that why not us? And will we get the same sort of opportunity when we get a selection or when we get an opportunity to play for the country? With most players, you will see they will not. They will get two or three opportunities. If they don't perform, they'll be out and they'll probably never play for India again. So if they're getting that many opportunities, now it's time that they really fulfill their potential.
An example of that from the 2016 tour of England to India, Karun Nair, triple century, showed what he could do, and then, you know, a string of a few low scores and he was out. Didn't really get a massive long rope like some of these other players tend to get. I mean, if you are going to stick with somebody like a Gill and an Iyer at 3 and 4, particularly for the next test with Virat Kohli still missing, who comes in to replace KL Rahul at number 5? Or do they come in at number 5? Or do you jiggle with the order? Who would it be? Rajat Pathidar has been scoring big.
Yeah.
Sarfaraz Khan's been like Don Bradman in the Ranji Trophy for the last couple of years, hasn't he? Averaging well over 100, just keeps churning. And you look at his overall Ranji Trophy record in first-class cricket, absolutely fantastic. So he's got his call-up to the squad. Or do you bring in somebody else left field? I mean, look, they're not going to go back to somebody like a Pujara or Rahane. Those days are gone now. So it's going to be one of the new guard. Who comes in?
I think it has to be between Rajat Pathidar or Sarfaraz Khan. And as you said, Sarfaraz Khan has performed so heavily in domestic cricket for the last 3 or 4 years, broke pretty much every record there is to break in domestic cricket. lots of couple of double hundreds, 300s. So I think he is somebody who will definitely want an opportunity, and he is somebody who likes the big occasion. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if they give him an opportunity before Rajat Pathidar. But both of them, a lot of talent. There's a lot of potential. But under such pressure, when you're missing KL Rahul, Virat Kohli, you're one down in the series, yeah, it'll be an interesting watch.
So the batting, it looks pretty well set apart from that one position. And then you've got the big question of who replaces Jadeja, because he's batting at six. So he's a crucial member of your top order. He's been scoring bucket loads of runs over the last 18, 24 months in Test cricket. Has really matured. You know, the man's got three triple centuries in first-class cricket. Yes, he plays in Rajkot, but it just shows you the capability that he's got with the bat. He's finally starting to realise that in Test cricket. He's playing sensible innings. He's holding that middle order together. Not only does he bat at number six and score you valuable runs, he takes loads of wickets for you as well. Do you go in with another all-rounder? Is there another all-rounder to come in? Do you have to go with maybe somebody like a Washington Sundar because of what he offers you with the bat? And, you know, obviously he's a decent enough bowler. He's not of the same quality of Jadeja. Do you have to go down that route? Or do you mess with the balance of the side and bring in a Kuldeep Yadav and then look to bolster your batting in some sort of other way? Or, you know, by maybe moving Akshar Patel up to number six and KS Bharat at seven, Ashwin at eight, Kuldeep at nine. Obviously that's going to weaken your batting though.
I think Kuldeep Yadav, I think it's a no-brainer. If you've got to replace a spinner, it's got to be Kuldeep Yadav. Then the other thing you can think about is, if you want to bring an all-rounder, I think Washington Sundar and Akshar Patel, there's not much of a difference. They're similar sort of a batter. So I would still stick with Akshar Patel because of the left-arm spin. You don't want too many bowlers who are bringing the ball into the right-hander. Then if you bring in Washington Sundar, then Ashwin, Kuldeep and him, all three of them really bring the ball into the right-hander, which makes it a lot easier. So I think they will stick with Akshar. They'll bring in Kuldeep in place of Jadeja. And as you said, give more responsibility to KS Bharat to bat at number six and bring in Akshar at number seven. Or do the opposite. You bring in Akshar Patel at number six, which will be a big task for Akshar because, yes, we know he can bat. But can he do a job at number six, which Jadeja did wonderfully for the last 2 or 3 years? He's been exceptional in that number six position. Ashwin, yes, he can bat. Under pressure, can he do it? Against a quality bowling attack where the ball's turning, the pitch is not conducive to batting. I think there's lots of question mark for Rahul Dravid and Rohit Sharma in the next test, Nikesh.
Yeah, who'd want to be the India coach, with all the scrutiny that you get when things are going wrong? I mean, look, when things are going right, Rohit is the best captain in the world, isn't he? And
yeah,
cricket can be a funny game. People have short memories, and it's not that he's been a bad captain or Dravid's been a bad coach. It's just those little, you know, subtle things which can make differences in these series. And we hope from an Indian point of view that that changes going forward, and there's that little bit more intensity, that little bit more of a clear plan about how they approach things. They can't just turn up and win test matches in India against sides like England. You know, it just doesn't happen. You've got to play well. You've got to be smart about it. You've got to stick to your game plan. You've got to have a plan A, B, C. And you know, implement those plans quickly before things start to drift, as we saw in that second innings when England were batting. You know, things were just meandering along and England were just piling on the runs. What was your mindset, just before we look ahead to Vizag in more detail, what was your mindset when India got set that target in the fourth innings? I mean, I was thinking, look, we've been here before over so many years with Indian cricket. It's not going to happen. It's too many. I mean, they got close. You know, 28 runs, that's a pretty good test match in the end. It should never have got to that stage where England had given them that kind of target. But once that target was in place, what were you thinking, looking at that Indian lineup? Was there any confidence coming out of the Jhunjhunwala household?
No, I think, I thought if they can have a good start, if Yashasvi again can bat well at the top of the order and give India a good start, there is an opportunity. But the moment that, when Tom Hartley got those 2 wickets in the same over, yeah, there were a lot of question marks. There were a lot of doubts in the mindset. Again, then it was on Rohit Sharma. If he stayed there for a bit longer and he batted well and took the game deep, there was an opportunity for India to win with KL with him. But you know it's going to be difficult on those pitches, because when the ball is doing so much and the bowlers are bowling so well, it's just, even if you have a 30, 40, 50 run partnership, suddenly you lose one wicket and lose two or three in quick succession, it's going to be always difficult to chase that total down. Doesn't happen very often in India when you've got 230, 240 to chase in the fourth innings. And India has to blame themselves for that, because they had an opportunity to score a lot of runs. Okay, they couldn't score a lot of runs, but they had an opportunity to roll England out again cheaply. They shouldn't have ever allowed Ollie Pope to get 190 odd on that pitch against three of the best spinners, you can say, in the last 10, 15 years for India. So it was poor bowling. Rohit had to think about a bit about his captaincy, but it was brilliant from Ollie Pope.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, whatever England did in that first test is going to give them so much confidence going ahead in the series, because you go 1-0 down, you get thrashed by a big margin in that first test. It's very difficult, I think, for touring sides to pick themselves up. As it stands now, it's going to be pretty difficult for India to try and get their confidence up after being rocked in the way that they did. But, you know, so many quality players, as you say, so in Vizag, you'd expect them to put up a better show. In terms of how the side's going to be made up then, so you've told me what you kind of think would be the Indian team makeup. If it was me, if I was selecting this Indian side tomorrow, I would go with Sarfaraz as my batter. I'd probably tinker with the order a touch, maybe put Sarfaraz at four, Shreyas Iyer at five, just to split, you know, Sarfaraz in between those two batters who've got similar kind of mindsets and see what he's all about. You give that added protection of not having him at number three, despite Shubman Gill's struggles. You carry on with Gill at three, because throwing somebody in on their debut at number three in a test match when you 1-0 down in the series, I think that's a little bit harsh. So number four, I'd go Sarfaraz. And you're right, Guldeep has to come in for Jadeja. I'd go a bit rogue. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I think I would take Shiraz out and bring Washington to the ring.
There you go. Exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Exactly what I was going to say.
I would go with one fast bowler, because you know that the pitches aren't going to help. And Shiraz hasn't particularly bowled that well anyway. So I would take him out, keep Bumrah, and get an extra spinner in Washington Sundar, and also strengthen my batting.
Absolutely, because that's going to be a concern with Jadeja going out. Yes, Akshar can bat. He's not quite of the same quality as Jadeja. He's got the potential that he has, but then if you've got Akshar batting at six or seven, you kind of feel like you need that bit more protection in the lower order, because although Ashwin's got five test centuries and has shown batting prowess over so many years, of late he's not really been scoring the runs that we kind of expect of him as well. So having somebody like a Washington Sundar in there as that threat with the spin and obviously strengthening your batting, I think that's a wise move. And Siraj, look, he didn't look particularly threatening in that test match. You know, conditions weren't really conducive to his style of bowling. Again, another bowler who relies a lot on early swing, doesn't he? Yeah. Swing and seam, he relies on quite early. He has got decent pace. He's got more pace than somebody like a Jimmy Anderson these days, but he's not got that same whip and that same skill set anywhere near the likes of somebody like Jasprit Bumrah. So Bumrah will have success going forward in the series, so he has to play. But you're right, yeah, they can do with one fast bowler, and almost like a throwback to the old days, isn't it? On Indian pitches, just have one fast bowler or one medium pacer just to, you know, see what they can do early on, and then over to the three or four spinners to just put the grind on. And the one disadvantage India have as well is that they don't have a top order batter who can bowl or doesn't bowl regularly. Nobody in that top order does regularly. That's another thing.
They don't have.
You go back to our days, your days of playing, and my days of, you know, growing up as well, for both of us watching those Indian sides where you've got Sachin, who bowled quite a bit. Ganguly, if conditions were, you know, seeming around overseas. Virender Sehwag later on used to bowl quite a lot of off spin. Yuvraj Singh, if he was playing, could bowl off spin. Suresh Raina. You know, there's so many options through the side. They don't have that now. So they're having to go with these spinning all rounders, which seems to be the new trend in Indian cricket. And that's the way to go. If you've got them, just pile it on and go for it. Conditions in Vizag. Let's move on to that. You've seen probably more cricket in Vizag than I have. over your years. It's going to spin. We know it's going to spin. How much is it going to spin, and is it going to be similar to Hyderabad?
So I recently played there when we had the Legends Tournament. I was there in November, December. We played in Vizag. That was one of our venues.
Got some runs, didn't you?
Yeah, if I have to go, I got an 80 out there. So if I had to go to the pitch we batted on, I can tell you what. You need three fast bowlers and one spinner on that pin. But it's an absolute belt. And the ball hardly turned. So
T20 format, right?
It was T20 format, but the pitch was an absolute belter. I don't think you're going to get anything like that for this test match. Again, they can make the pitch the way they want. They can prepare a turner in Vizag, which we have seen in previous occasions as well when we played Ranji Trophy as well. A lot of times they used to turn and drag a lot. And I'm expecting something like that again in Vizag, because India is not going to play on a pitch which is just conducive for fast bowling, or it's an absolute delta to bat on. They got to go for pitches which is going to turn, and that's the approach they should take anyways. Their home conditions, they should try and take advantage. Unfortunately, the advantage was taken by England in the first test, but they will hope that they can turn things around. So I think it'll be that sort of a pitch where the ball will turn from day one. So I would love to see, as we discussed it earlier, Nikesh, I would love to see four spinners for India and just with one fast bowler, just beat Bumrah.
Yeah, that would be quite something to behold. And England have said that, Brendan McCullum has hinted that Shoaib Bashir might come in, and if Jack Leach is fit, they might even play four spinners. I mean, it's with what Bazball is, and we'll discuss that in just a second about the actual terminology and the philosophy, slightly different to what people think it is. But that would be such a Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes thing to do, wouldn't it? Just, we've got four spinners, let's just play them all.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I think so. And again, we'll discuss the Bazball. As you said, I think if people get it completely wrong when we use the word Bazball, they just think that it's just going out there and slogging, which it's not. It's an approach. It's a mindset. And I think that mindset really works for England. There were doubts that will it work in every condition? Yes, it will. If you have the right approach and the right mindset for that particular pitch and condition.
What Bazball sort of says to me, you talked about mindset, approach, being aggressive whenever you're playing, always playing for victory, never settling for a draw. And if you're going to lose, you go out fighting. That reminds me so much of Steve Waugh's Australia side.
Yeah.
That record-breaking side that won 16 test matches in a row. That was obviously ended by India with that famous 2001 test match in Kolkata, in probably, arguably the greatest series ever played. But it took that to end what Steve Waugh's, side was all about. And even post that defeat, they went on and dominated in conditions all around the world. And there was that aggressive mindset. So it really does remind me of that side. And when you're comparing this side to that side, yes, they don't have as many individually great world-class players as that Australia side. I mean, Steve Waugh had so much armory, really, to throw at teams, so many weapons in his arsenal to just go out and be able to play that way. I think it's almost a little bit more impressive what Ben Stokes is doing as a captain and as a man manager of all these younger players, because he's got, debutants like Rehan Ahmed performing so well in Pakistan when he made his debut. Tom Hartley comes in, gets tonked in the first innings, but he keeps bowling him. He keeps bowling, giving him that confidence that you can do it. You've been picked for a reason. Go and do your thing. And if it doesn't come off, it doesn't come off. But, we're going to give you every opportunity to do so. Ollie Pope in recent times has established himself as a test cricketer. Harry Brooks come into the side. Yeah, he's not fit for this, or he's not playing in this tour because of personal reasons. But another one who's come in and really established himself in the side with this philosophy. Zach Crawley got given a massive long rope when he wasn't in form, and all of a sudden now has started to repay with big runs. So, you look at all these players, they're not world-class players yet, but the way he has managed them, that's what Bazball is all about. It's about taking all these guys under your wings, and they are going to follow you into war. Whatever tactics you use in this battle, they're going to follow you, and they're going to do everything that is asked for them. They're going to give 100%, and they're going to go down perhaps on occasions, but not without a fight. And to be honest, you look at his record, they've not been going down too often over the reign of Ben Stokes as Test captain, have they?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot depends how a player matures or how he develops at international level. It a lot depends on the coach and the captain and the kind of support you show towards the player as a coach and a captain. And again, going back to that formula, the same thing is happening with the likes of Shreyas Iyer and Shubman Gill for India. A similar sort of an approach where you know that these guys have got a lot of potential, they've got a lot of talent, and if you keep backing them for a long period, at some point in time, they will start performing and you'll reap the rewards as a team. And that's what I think Ben Stokes has done. And you're 100% right on the approach of baseball is just picking the players and then showing faith and confidence and allowing them to go out there and play with freedom, where they know that if I don't get it right in one or two occasions, I'm not going to be dropped. And that gives you a massive confidence as a player. If you're told that you're going to get 10 innings when you walk into a test side, then doesn't matter if you get a zero every innings, you're still going to get your 10th knock. Imagine how much confidence you'll have in your ability and your approach when you go out there in the middle. And that's exactly what has been done with these players. And now, as you said, all these players, you've got to create world-class players. No one becomes a Virat Kohli the moment. You know, Virat Kohli is not made in one day. You've got to give them enough time to mature as a player. And after that, they become a Virat Kohli. They become a Rohit Sharma. They become a Virendra Sehwag and Joe Root. So I think for any player, any young cricketer, when they come into the side, they've got to be given confidence. And that's exactly what these two are doing.
Yeah, but it's fantastic that Test cricket is now sexy again, right? Yeah. In England in particular. It's exciting. It's captured the imagination of people all around the world, really, who are fans of cricket, that this is exciting to watch. And we saw an exciting first test. Hopefully we get just as an exciting second one in Vizag, and we'll see what the team makeups are and the conditions out there as well. But whatever happens, England will certainly be going for another victory. India will bounce back hard as well. We're expecting some hard-fought cricket and will, of course, bring you all the fallout from that second test in Vizag once it has concluded here on Cricket 8. But that's about all we've got time for on this week's episode. My thanks to my good friend Abhishek Jhunjhunwala. Abhishek, where can listeners find you on social media?
Oh, it's just AbhiJJW on my Instagram handle and the same on Twitter.
Excellent. So do go and follow Abhishek. I'm at Nikesh Raghani on Instagram and on X, on Twitter, whatever you want to call it these days. Do like and subscribe to the podcast, whether you're watching on YouTube, whether you're watching via your podcast provider as well. Remember, Cricket 8, talking Indian cricket every week with this podcast, India on Cricket 8. We'll be back with you next week.